Good to see so many people out on a blistery Ottawa evening. I didn't actually expect to see this many people come out on such a cold evening. Winter has definitely arrived here in Ottawa. So it being the new year and all, I had this talk actually I was going to give before New Year's, but as some of you know from the email that went out, it was canceled because of the huge snowstorm we had. So I'm rather glad I did cancel it in the morning because it turned out to be quite a storm. So this is kind of a talk that you'd normally get before New Year's, but you're getting it after. But, you know, if you've already done all this stuff I'm going to talk about, that's, you can redo it or you can just let it go, since it's a lot about letting go. How many, just before I get started, how many people here are fairly new to the practice of insight meditation? Okay, so not too many. So I won't go over, because the topic of letting go can be discussed at so many different, in so many different ways. And I noticed there's a few people here that were at the I did a New Year's retreat, a three-day retreat over New Year's at Galilee, and I noticed a few faces here, so it's going to be a bit of a repeat for you, but sometimes new things just get thrown in, so maybe you'll hear some new things. I'm going to start with a story, a retreat in India. Give you some example of letting go. So we're at this beautiful retreat center, ashram, for a six-week retreat. Just 6 weeks of calm and bliss is what I sort of had in mind for this 6 weeks retreat. So the first night we sit, and it seems like every time we sit, this guy gets his cart where he's selling all these various wares, and he has like a loudspeaker on the roof. It's like one of those megaphones, only it's connected to a microphone. And he starts making sure it works. Hello, hello, hello everyone, hello in English. Sorry. And then a bunch of words in Hindi, and then inviting people to buy his wares. And so we're meditating, and every time we'd sit, the loudspeaker seemed to start up, and you'd hear the same thing again. Hello, hello, everybody. A lot of Hindi words and some sales pitches on different things that he had for sale. So we're kind of sitting there, and it didn't turn out to be so blissful. What was kind of arising was, how could I escape and sort of detach that loudspeaker so that it wouldn't work, and all these, these kinds of thoughts, and how am I going to survive 6 weeks of this, because it just seemed to go on and on, just when I thought it would stop, and it would start up again, and really starting to, agitate over it. You can imagine the mind just kind of ruminating over this loud noise. What I found was over days, the mind started to wear down. Just kind of the thoughts about killing this loudspeaker and and so forth just started to kind of wear down. And I remembered mindfulness, the part that we were there to practice was mindfulness and meditation. And then it occurred to me that maybe the problem wasn't the loudspeaker. Maybe there was something else here that was going on. The loudspeaker was producing sound, but my mind was making all kinds of other things out of it. So maybe it wasn't the loudspeaker that was the problem. Maybe it was the mind. The mind making a problem out of the sounds coming out of the loudspeaker. Over time, it started to just be seen as sound. So once the mind, once it was seen through as the mind, making a problem with all the stories about why it shouldn't be that way. Once I could let go of that, it just became sound. So the only solution in that moment was to let go, was to surrender, relax around what was happening in the present moment. And once that happened, it was possible to just be with the sound. In fact, over time, I didn't really even hear the sound. It became kind of like static on a radio or something, just kind of background noise to the meditation. So it ceased to be a problem. It actually became kind of humorous too. It kept happening when we would sit. It became kind of humorous. So that became a great teaching for me. I didn't need to destroy the sound system to be happy in that moment. I could just be okay with it. Just be okay with the sound. And that was a process of letting go. That's what I was calling letting go. Ajahn Chah said, if you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you have complete peace. So I let go a little there. So there was a little peace. And I could just kind of feel the more that there was letting go, the more peace arose. The Buddha put it quite succinctly, learn to let go. This is the secret of happiness. Doesn't get any more direct than that. So letting go seems to be pretty important. So I'd like to look at, what keeps us from letting go? What are we letting go of? And how do we let go? So it's got nothing to do with making anything disappear or annihilating anything. Sometimes we think of letting go and we think of, let's toss it. Let's get rid of this. It's got nothing to do with that. In fact, it's quite the opposite of that. It's more about letting be. Letting be might be a better word. So the letting go is kind of, I'm not going to throw my phone, but a letting go would be a throwing. That's how we envision perhaps that word. So the letting go is actually more like, if we're hanging on, like that damn sound's going to drive me crazy. And just kind of hanging on to it and spinning. The letting go is just allowing it to be as it is in that moment. Letting it go to the resistance of what is in that moment. And really, when you think about it, that's all we're doing when we practice over and over and over again. Like in your meditation, we're practicing, we're discovering what it's like to be a human being and what this mind does. And part of that is noticing how the mind grasps onto things and pushes other things away. So we're starting to see the patterns, habitual patterns of the mind that cause constriction, cause agitation, cause suffering in so many different ways. We start to see that, and we can start to see how letting go of that, that it's just letting things be, can bring a sense of peace and ease to those moments. And that's all when we're practicing, it's kind of that's what we're doing, is a continual seeing of what happens when we don't let go and what happens when we do let go. What happens when we let things just be as they are in the present moment, and what happens when we fight with what is in the present moment. And the more we see that, the more we start to, our mind, we almost rewire it. It starts to go, okay, this is what peace and ease feels like. So So this is if this is my intention, then this is how I could live my life as well. So it's really not a matter of analyzing and problem solving. It's just letting be. So we can let go of anger, bitterness, past relationships, stories, perceived wrongdoings that we've done, perceived bad choices we've made, our ex, our ex-boss, our ex-partner. They're all things that come up perhaps when we let the mind be silent, these stories. So these are the things that we can let go of, to allow. The one thing that the Buddha had some pretty deep psychology in his teachings. Because there's one thing that, you know, we've, since, you know, probably in the last 100 years, but these teachings were 2,500 years ago. In the last 100 years, we've started to learn that what we fight with in our lives, so what we resist in terms of what's coming into our mental, our mind states, what we resist actually compounds and persists, proliferates. And what the Buddha was pointing to is not to do that, not to fight with what's arising, but just let it arise, let it be, and then let it go, because it's impermanent. It will also dissolve. It might stick around and twirl a little, but start to notice if you can just let it be. Let that story just kind of, as soon as it becomes a believed story, now you're hooked, right? You're going down the difference between a thought and a believed thought. You've bought into the believed one. So how do we let go? We notice what's arising moment by moment. Is conditional and non-personal. It's selfless, so to speak. And we leave things as they are. There's one of my favorite teaching poems, I guess you could call it. And it comes from a story. It's an old Indian story about the way that monkeys used to be captured. I hope they don't do that. This isn't happening anymore, but maybe it is. I don't know. They'd take a coconut and put a hole in it and put a banana inside the coconut and hang it in a tree. And the hole was just big enough for the monkey to get their fist inside the coconut. And they'd grab the hold of the banana. But it wasn't big enough for them to get the fist out with the banana in their hand. So they're basically holding on to the banana. And this coconut was attached to the tree. And they were captured. They were stuck. All they had to do to be free was let go of the banana, pull their hand out. But they would actually hold on to that banana because they wanted that banana so much that they would hold on to it until somebody came along with a net and captured them. So Anna Merwood wrote a poem called Dropping the Banana, which is a playoff on that story, I believe. Dropping the banana, all I have to do is to let go. Like a falcon releasing a rabbit, like an athlete relinquishing a golden dream, like a hungry child tossing a ripe mango into the sun. All I have to do, I dread. What happens if I can't let go? What happens if I can? Surely it is safer not to experiment, for see here, I am not alone. At the office, by the pool, I recognize you, fellow monkeys, clinging to the thresholds of normalcy. rattling imprisoned limbs, you dare me to desert? All I have to do, I do. Finger by finger, I loosen my grip. There was no banana, only a fist contorted with fear, choking the innocent air. So even what we're holding on to is imaginary, created in our minds, fabricated by our minds. Also, by letting go, we create room for something else to enter. We create space. So letting go and letting be isn't about, you know, not acting in any way. It creates space for something else to enter, so that there's other options and other choices can emerge. We're not stuck on the same tape, playing it over and over again. Letting go is ultimately seeing through the illusion of I, me, and mine, about non-attachment as well, and a respect for that everything is impermanent, the impermanence of life. So it's kind of going with the natural flow of things. So we think of the year that just passed. I mean, what I've been talking about a lot is letting go in each moment. And we can let go. We can let go after. So we may, something may arise in a moment, and we can say, "Oh, yeah, I reacted. I became angry, or I spoke unharsh words, caused suffering for myself. I can feel it, in my body. I can see it in the other person's body and their facial expressions." There's suffering all around. You can think back and go, "Oh, I can let go of that." So that's kind of letting go after. So you learn by seeing the suffering results from unskillful actions. You can let go during. So you can see, "Oh, I see suffering arising right now with this, by hanging on to this, by clinging to this, I see it." We can let go before. "Oh, I know what happens if I go there. I don't have to go there." And you can let go after, as I said. So really what when we're thinking back to the year, it's the kind of letting go of after. What can we let go of that didn't wasn't conducive to our spiritual path? Something that wasn't helpful in our lives generally to our well-being and happiness? What are those things that we would like to just let go of? Of course, bringing that sense of self-compassion with it too, that we may see that as something we'd like to let go of, but it may arise again, maybe something that arises again for us. And we see, okay, there it is. But at least we've seen that is something we'd like to let go of. That's something you can do on these occasions like New Year's, is use this period where we've kind of made a thing out of it, where we set resolutions and we do new things in our lives. So we can use this as a way to help us in our practice, even though it's like a day like any other day, but we can still use it in our practice in this way. We can also set then intentions for the next year. And it's not really about the kind of resolutions that we tend to set for ourselves. Often we set resolutions in terms of things that we should and shouldn't do. I must not do that anymore, and it's kind of based on a a self, self-criticism, almost a self-loathing, perhaps. I've got to stop doing that. I got to get fit. The fitness industry lives on this. They sell more fitness memberships in January than I'm told any other 6 month period of any year. And 60% of those people will never actually come into the fitness facility. So it's a New Year's resolution that doesn't have, you know, it's just I should, based on a kind of self-criticism and based on a self-improvement project. So a lot of these resolutions they remain unattained. Perhaps you've made a New Year's resolution never to make a New Year's resolution again. And a lot of I've talked to a lot of people, especially in the Dharmic circles, that was my last New Year's resolution 15 years ago, was never to, because of the nature of them, because they can be so self-deprecating and kind of putting ourselves down in the process. So what I'm proposing is kind of a way of doing this that is full of compassion and kindness towards ourselves. Same with the letting go, which is full of compassion and kindness towards ourselves. Much the same way that the ethical guidelines that are part of the Eightfold Path and part of the ethical teachings of the Buddha are intended to be held, not as kind of, you know, if you do that, you're bad and you'll never be good. More like these are trainings, so not harming others is something you take on as a training. So you notice when you do harm others and you notice when you don't. But you've set this as when you take what are called the precepts in Buddhism, the Father's Five, and they grow from there, basic five. That you set this to take this on as a training in your life, and if you don't, if you happen to do something contrary to that ethical guideline, you notice and then you begin again without the kind of beating yourself up part of it. So there's a compassion, and you notice when other people as well do things that are harmful. So it's got that same kind of flavor to it, that same kind of approach, which I think is very compassionate, self-compassionate, and compassionate for others. You see that we don't always, and we set intentions, and they don't always work out exactly. It's the same with other people. So when somebody does something that's hurtful, they're just off the track a little in terms of what they'd likely intend for their actions to be. So we can also then be more forgiving in the world with others. So it's not coming from a place of aversion, something that we don't like in ourselves that we want to get rid of, or a place of greed, something that if only I had this, I'd be happy. Now, my New Year's resolution was, to make, $100,000 in the next year. I thought, well, if I'll just set this as a resolution. So there's a little bit of greed in that. And then when I first started on the practice, I thought a good resolution would be to discontinue greed, hatred, and delusion. I think I'll just be done with that. That's my New Year's resolution. Well, if that worked out, it would have been a really good one, but it would have kind of been done. I wouldn't still be here, working on it. So it's different. It's setting intention. A path or an intention is a path or a practice that is focused on how we're being in the present moment. Based on what matters most to us. and we make a commitment to align our lives, our actions, our worldly actions with those inner values, what matters most to us. So that's how you can kind of look at an intention. How we're being in each moment. Because we're letting go of the past moment. So you do something, it's not consistent. It's not something that aligns with what is most important to you. You're letting that go, right? So it's each moment. Right? Because it's the past moments. It's done. Now you can look at this moment that you're in right now. This is the only moment that is your life, and you have any actions that can take place. So there's a unity between your life and your deepest aspirations. That's how I like to look at it. Bringing this alignment, this unity between your life, how you're living your life, and what are your deepest aspirations. So it really is, it's really about connecting with those deepest aspirations. What matters most to you is how I like to put it. So it provides meaning in a larger context, independent of whether you achieve any particular goals or not. You know, a goal is, you know, you have an outcome that you'd want, and then you plan, apply discipline, and then you work hard to achieve it. We still do that. We still have goals in that way. But it becomes part of this larger context of that I'm talking about now. So what is your heart's deepest intention? As we move into the new year, that's something we can look at. What is your mind heart's deepest intention? And really look intuitively from a sense of felt wisdom. You could even, you know, do a meditation for yourself where you pose that as a contemplation. And then just sit. So don't go looking for the answer, but just sit with the question. What is my heart's deepest intention? And see what arises in terms of an intuitive felt sense of the question. And if nothing arises, that's fine. You can do it again. There'll be more moments where you can sit with that question. And sometimes you know what really matters, what really, really, really matters. You can say a few reallys, because there's all often some layers. You know, think of what really matters, you know, your health and my family, and, you know, it's, you know, what really, 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 you know, you can go down even a few layers, perhaps, into that. The rational mind doesn't often get it. The rational mind's good at setting goals, you know, planning the steps to achieve those goals, but when it comes to our heart's deepest intention, it's not often the job for the rational mind. Gets a little confused with that. To try to think about that, the mind can get a little confused by it. And intention is very important. The Buddha called intention the forerunner of all action. So nothing arises without first an intention arising. So our intentions arise and we notice those intentions. Like in a moment to moment sense, we notice moment to moment an intention arise and then an action. So if you can kind of tune into that process as well, that moment to moment intention, action, thought, intention, action. And this happens very quickly, it doesn't happen at that pace that I just demonstrated, but if we can tune into that, we really see what's behind what we do in the world, our worldly actions. So this can keep us on the path, and notice when we're not in alignment with our deepest truth. And notice when we are. We can be aware of them. Be aware of the intentions as they arise. We start to intuitively know when we're aligned. It becomes like an embodied felt sense of being in alignment. And this is an ongoing effort. So it's again not the sense of a resolution or I sometimes call them a resolution. Every year we have another solution to, for us to become, you know, a better human being. We keep coming up with these resolutions. It's more of an ongoing effort, constantly, moment by moment. You know, we set these deepest aspirations and then moment by moment we see where we're at, whether we're in alignment or not. And we begin again and again without judgment. We begin anew in each moment, letting go of the last moment. I mean, we can learn from the last moment, and we see suffering, we see non-suffering. But it means it's a more malleable approach, more flexible, more malleable approach to being with life. And all progress is a good thing. We can celebrate the journey in a much more, in a kinder and gentler way. And it's about coming home to yourself. That's a lot of what this practice is coming home to ourselves. So I'll end it there and open it up for any questions or comments, questions about the talk or anything else that's come up in your practice. We have this, for the new folks, this little protocol, I guess you'd call it. We go like this before we speak and then when we're finished, just so people know when you're finished.
I might have missed it, but the difference between setting intentions and clinging. Because then wouldn't you be grasping it and living that intention?
Mm-hmm. So we can, I think perhaps if I'm reading you right, Paul, you're pointing to grasping at spiritual intentions as opposed to worldly ones. Is that what you're pointing to?
Say an intention for me would be to be kind, to live with kindness. So when I'm unkind, I suffer because I'm grasping to be kind.
Hmm. So, we'd have to be careful not to set some intentions just as we would a resolution, something that, okay, I'm not kind, so I need to be. We're looking at our deepest aspirations. And not something we want to improve about ourselves, but what's our deepest heart's aspiration that we'd like to align with in terms of intention. What can arise is what some people call spiritual materialism, where you then set up your deepest aspiration as something that you start to grasp for and desire, and then you see suffering around that too. So we have to, there's a to be careful with the balance, that what we set as our intention doesn't become something then that we grasp for. It becomes an object of desire that then causes suffering. And we can do that in any of our spiritual. We can any part of this practice, we can start to really grasp for it. Oh, I want that mindfulness thing. I really want that. Well, I want to be aware of what I'm doing moment by moment, non-judgmentally right now. And then just grasp for it. Or kindness or compassion. So it's spiritual materialism. We've created, suffering around wanting that spiritual gain. We have to be very aware of that. Very aware of that in this kind of practice. Because I'm going to use the word will. Maybe not the right word. I'm going to say that will arise for each of us. It might not. Would often arise. But I think it's so common from what I see in the spiritual communities that I can pretty much say it will happen at some point. It might not last too long, but I think it will happen. For some people, it lasts for years. It's been years. The spirit, desire for this, and they construct a whole ego around it. That when they get a piece of it, like a whole new ego project, gets developed around this spiritual project. So, really to be aware of what you're pointing to, that not to create this as a new self-improvement project, to hold it in a gentler way, and be aware that clinging to anything causes suffering. Clinging to anything as I, me, or mine will cause suffering. But at the same time, we're aligning, we're looking at what's our deepest aspiration. I mean, wise intention or wise aspiration is one of the elements of the Eightfold Path. But it's got that word wise before it, or sometimes it's translated as right, but not in the sense of right and wrong. That's why the word wise. It's a little less, doesn't have that ring of right and wrong, but it's, right intention or wise aspiration. That wise part is very important, but it's got that wisdom behind it. And underneath it.
Well, I would like to thank you for this talk. It's really speaking about two, especially letting go and looking at what are my deepest aspirations. Because I start, this time of the year, I start thinking about what is important for me and direction I want to go in this year, so would help me to think in terms of value, separation, and intention. Thank you.
So I had a small episode of letting go today. We, my friends and I, bought these fat bikes. I don't know, they're mountain bikes with tires this big, so you ride the snowshoe trails in the winter. Very little traction, very difficult. If you hit the side of the trail, you lose momentum, you just fall over because you're clipped into the pedals. Today was the first ride in the snow with my coach. He's an elite athlete. He's been on the Tonight Show because of some of his expeditions and everything, but. So for the first half of the ride, for 45 minutes, I'd get about 20 feet, and I'd hit some, I'd just fall over, and I would just go 20 feet, fall over, 20 feet, fall over. Got so tense, frustrated, discouraged with myself. Halfway through the ride, still another 45 minutes to go. I realized that I built up this whole resume of ride 20 feet and expect to fall over. And if I kept that resume, which is the conception that I built in those 45 minutes, which was my whole fat biking career, just because of the notes, you know, that I would just finish off the ride, riding 20 feet and falling over. So I had to let go of everything that happened for the first half of the ride. I had to kind of take it with a beginner's mind, saying, forget everything that happened, pretend you're just starting the ride for the first time. You know, be in the present moment, forget the history, forget the resume of the last 45 minutes, and just relax. The second half of the ride, 100% better. So, but you can see how that's kind of an analogy for bigger things in life. Is I could have let that first 45 minutes impact the second half of that ride negatively, but by trying to forget it, just be in the moment, again, it's fine. It worked out quite well.
Guidance on sensing deep aspiration.
I was just waiting for this.
Sorry.
we could do a little. I mean, I'll do a mini one now. It takes longer than 2 minutes, but we'll. I'll give you an idea of the flavor of it, and then it's something you can take home and practice. I find early morning very conducive to this kind of practice. As soon as you wake up, like literally as soon as you wake up, sit with in a meditation posture, so an erect spine. And then we'll just do it right now. We'll just do a little. Get your meditation posture, and the part of the posture that's most critical for insight meditation is this kind of erect spine. The rest of it, you can be in a chair or on the floor. Your hands can be on your thighs or, you know, palms, you know, whatever you find comfortable. But the erect spine part is crucial. Just settling into this moment, allowing whatever is present, whatever is manifesting in your experience to just be. Just allowing moment by moment experience to arise and pass away. letting a question that I will pose just sit in your awareness. The question is, what matters most to you? What is your heart's deepest aspiration? What really matters to you? Just letting that question sit in awareness, not trying to think about the question or analyze it or come to any conclusion about it. Just allowing that question to rest. Just kind of hang there in awareness. What really matters to you? Perhaps going down another layer, what really, really matters to you? The very deepest aspiration. What really, really, really matters to you? The very deepest, deepest aspiration, heart's aspiration. So that in just literally a few minutes, you can see how the layers can peel away on that rather quickly. So it's just resting with the question. It's a contemplation more than an insight meditation technique. It's really a contemplation. But I find contemplations can be very helpful as an adjunct on this path. So if I have questions, I just try to align. I've done that exercise, so I kind of know what the layers are. But whenever there's a decision point, I try and align that with those deepest aspirations.
trying to tie
down that investigation. We had a talk on that. Again, investigation is just being curious about open awareness, whatever's arising in awareness. Here we're contriving it.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. So that's why I called it a contemplation. Open awareness. Investigation is you. I just allow what's arising moment by moment, and you bring a sense of curiosity to it. You look at patterns and aspects of it as well.
Contemplation would be like an investigation, but we're directing the subject to a single
thought. Yeah, you're raising a question. You're contemplating or reflecting on a question of some kind. some people in Zen, they call it Ajahn Shanti, we call it self-inquiry as well. He has a self-inquiry process that he... So it's got that kind of element to it, is where it's directed.
And this is sort of in counterpoint to New Year's resolutions and letting go. This is about New Year's resolutions and renewing. And that many of the New Year's resolutions are about doing something new, but it's also helpful to recommit, like recommit to show up here each week. And by doing that, I think that's a reinforcement, and also it's a recommitment, and with that often comes a sense of appreciation of your own efforts of what you're doing. So I find that practice helpful in the sense that when you're looking for what's important, you often recommit to those important things.
Beautifully put. And the another aspect of the Eightfold Path is wise effort. So in that sense, as we, these efforts flow from this connection with this alignment with our aspirations, and then a recommitment, a motivation to apply effort to what's important to us. It's interesting that that's effort, you know, not a striving, grasping kind of effort, but that kind of committed, wise effort is one of the elements of the Eightfold Path. Because without effort, without this recommitment to our aspirations, there's no action, there's no progress on the path. We become lazy meditators. The Buddha actually said we can become lazy meditators, or we don't put in the effort required while we're sitting, or to actually do the practice, and to do our formal practice, which is our daily meditation formally, and our informal practice where we bring that into our daily lives and see how it manifests, and we can reflect back to how have things changed. Sometimes we don't do that. We don't say, I've been doing this for years, and God, I still get angry at so-and-so, you know, my neighbor for whatever, starting his lawnmower at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, or whatever it might be, right? And still get, look at all the things that have changed as well, and that can help us recommit as well. So I thank you all for coming, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.